Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
Welcome back to All of It. The Netflix show House of Cards is considered to be the first great success of the streaming era. It was Netflix's first foray into the prestige binge-watch model when it premiered in 2013. Back then, the creators and actors had no idea whether this model would work and certainly could not have predicted the runaway success the show would turn out to be. After six seasons, 73 episodes, 56 Emmy nominations, a scandal, and the eventual ouster of the series star, Kevin Spacey, the show finally came to a dramatic end last year. One of the most sinister characters in the House of Cards universe was political operative Doug Stamper. He was played with a cold-blooded steeliness for all seven seasons by Michael Kelly, who, for the record, is lovely and affable in real life. Michael is nominated for an Emmy this year for Outstanding Supporting Actor in a Drama Series. Also, you can catch Michael Kelly in the forthcoming season of Jack Ryan, which premieres on November 1st. Take a listen to the trailer.
What's the most major threat on the world stage?
Venezuela is the single greatest resource of oil on the planet. So, why is this country in the midst of one of the greatest humanitarian crises in history?
Your concern is that the Russians are secretly selling weapons to Venezuela?
It would fit a pattern. It's time we
stop. Hey, this ends up in the news, it's just going to cause panic.
In nuclear Venezuela, you will not hear about in the news because we'll already be dead.
Business a pleasure, Jack.
I'm here for work.
Mentioned.
You guys stay. You have no protection. Nobody's coming to save us.
We do this together. I can live with that.
I spoke with Michael Kelly recently about his time on House of Cards, Jack Ryan, and that Supercuts commercial you have definitely seen.
Look at you, laughing and flipping and brushing your days away, unaware of how lucky you are. Air, such an underappreciated gift. Show-offs. Yeah, look at all the terrible things you do to it. You disrespect it. You sacrifice it. You cut it yourself.
You like it?
No. You leave it unattended. You wear it up. You do that to it.
How about now?
Still no. Despite everything you've done, there's still one place that cares more about your hair than you will ever know.
Here's my conversation with Michael Kelly. Michael.
Hello.
Boy, you're scary. Doug Stamper's so scary. It's interesting. There was a great profile of you in the New York Times, and you're like, you're a dad with your kid, you're getting ice cream, and it's just like, you just seem like this great guy, and then your character is so scary and creepy. What did you think when you first read Doug Stamper?
You know, it's funny. I was just listening to that clip, and I'm like, God, he's such a better negotiator than I am. when I first read it, I had auditioned for so many different characters on the show. First, Hammerschmidt, and then Lucas, and then Russo, and then finally we ended up with Stamper. Thank God. But when I first read it, I had a lot of questions, but it was Bo Willimon who really gave me the core of the character when he told me, you know, for the entire first season, just don't emote. And I want everyone at the end of the first season to go, what is up with that guy? And I was like, you know, it just made so much sense to me. It made everything, it's what I based the character on, were those two. Gave me his walk, his voice, everything. It just, it was so informative. But when I first read it, I was just like, you know, oh man, is he going to get to do this like for the rest of the series? Like, you know, those, because yeah. They only give you a couple episodes in the beginning. But yeah, I was so thrilled. I mean, I say it all the time. He's a gift, that character, to be given that to portray as an actor. It's just a gift.
Well, let's roll back to when you were first getting involved, because as I was saying, this was weird. This was different. You know, what did you think when you were approached about a show on a streaming service as an actor? What did that sound like to you?
Well, at the time, they had already had, you know, David Fincher, Bo Willimon, Kevin Spacey, Robin Wright, and various other people attached to the project. So I was just like, oh my gosh, I get to go play with these guys. But I also remember thinking, like, I wonder if anyone's ever going to see this. Like, really, mm-hmm. Is this streaming thing? You
know, that was reasonable to think at the time.
I know, it was, and it's only 6 years ago. Like, we're seven now, I guess, almost. But that's, it's crazy to think what's happened. But that was my thought. I was like, I remember calling my manager and saying, we're making something really special. Fincher had shown me some. And I said, we're making something really special. I don't know if anyone's ever going to see it, but this is going to be cool, you know. But it blows my mind to, you know, fast forward now, my kids who are going to be 7 and 10 this month, that's all they know is streaming. They don't, there's no live television. Sesame Street in the beginning, but now they're like 7 and 10 is like, you know, it's movie night, it's Amazon, it's Netflix, and that's all their shows, all the movies, everything is streaming for them.
That is what TV is to them, them. I was saying my son's about the same age, and he's the one who figured out how to put it on the smart TV, Netflix, not me.
My kids can, like, it's totally so true. My kids can negotiate that remote so much better than me.
Like, hey, mommy wants to watch Nailed It. Could you help me out? I'm curious what your thoughts are on the impact of streaming video for actors and on acting.
I mean, you know, I never looked at it like differently for performance wise, or, you know, you do a job and all you ever try to do is do the best you can do at what you're doing. But for an audience, I mean, what it's become is, at this point, we're, you know, the fact that I was on a show that was relevant and seen by a lot of people, I feel so fortunate, because so many shows today just get buried. You know, how many shows are released that you never see, you've never heard of? And how many times a day does someone say, have you seen? Oh, you got to see it. And like my notes, you know, on your iPhone, like my notes are filled with shows to watch that I'm never going to get to, you know?
It's sort of interesting. It's a little bit of a double-edged sword. There's more work, mm-hmm. and there's more interesting work, but because there's so much, will it be seen?
Will it be seen? Can you get on a show that's, you know, your goal as an actor always is, or at least for me, was to make a comfortable living being an actor. So I feel blessed to do that. But then to be on a show that actually gets watched by people, you're just like, wow, man, this is a dream. You know, because there's so much, and it mm-hmm. is great for actors today because there is more work for us, you know.
My guest is Michael Kelly. We're talking about House of Cards. We'll talk about Jack Ryan in a minute. So I want to go back to Doug. Well, you mentioned that those first instructions you were given and how to play him. I'm a sort of reptilian, it sounds like, in a way, right? But he evolves over the course of this series. How would you describe... Hey, by the way, if you haven't seen the end of it, we're going to have spoilers, but it's been a while, everybody, so yeah, don't tweet at us. Over the course of the series, his evolution, how would you describe it?
That's tough because, you know... I think some people could look at it and say, did this person even grow, you know?
Right, yeah.
And then some people would say, yes, he completely grew. So I think my perception of him is that he was always Doug, you know? And at his core, everything that he does or did is one form of addiction for him. Everything about him is addiction. It was alcohol. It's always going to be alcohol mm-hmm. for that guy. Rachel, Frank, his job, though, I think that was the one thing he wanted to be the best he could be at what he did for a living. And he did happen to believe that what he and Frank were doing together was always the right thing. Some of the things that he had to do, I think, pushed his soul and his person as who he was. It pushed him beyond where he was comfortable. But in the end, he was willing to do anything and everything, you know, for what he believed was right.
Most people know this, that the sixth season, there was a chance that it wasn't going to happen because there was a discussion about, do we end production after Kevin Spacey was dismissed around sexual assault allegations? Do we continue? I know Robin Wright really fought for it because she was thinking, there's so many people jobs and we're not mm-hmm. finished yet. What were those initial conversations like? How did you feel in that moment? Did you want to continue or did you think like, well, this is over now?
No, for me, has been the greatest job of my life. That crew is my family. I wanted more than anything to continue. When it first happened, obviously there's a million things that go through your head, and I went to a dark place, and it was an incredibly difficult time in my life. The focus quickly shifted to how, you know, this crew, and I can honestly say this, is like family to me. These people, I loved my crew. I loved going to work every day. My last day of work was as great as my first day at work. And on a television show, I know a lot of actors, that's a pretty tough thing to say after 6 years. But I loved it. And it was because of the people that we were surrounded with there. That was a family. You know, my son was born when we started. And like a couple weeks after we started filming, my son was born. Many of the crew members had kids. And so for me, it was like, you know, you go to that place, that dark place, and everything that happens, and you're just in a very foreign place in your head. Very quickly, I called Robin after a couple of days, and I was like, what are we going to do? Like, we can't not finish this. And she's like, oh, I'm already on it. And so there were talks in Netflix and MRC, and everyone decided that, you know, after finding out everything they found out, okay, well, how do we do it? How does it happen? And for the writers, I mean, that was the hardest thing. Can you imagine, mm-hmm. like,
have to rethink an entire season,
yeah.
right?
And in 2 months, something you typically spend a year on, thinking about, developing, creating all the storylines, blocking out every episode for 13 episodes, and then, you know, oh, by the way, we're going to take out the lead actor, and you have 2 months to rewrite. We ended up only doing 8 because of it, but credit. A lot of credit to them. But yeah, it became about the crew because both Rob and myself, we were just like, these people waited almost a year to get back to filming as it was. We were a long hiatus to begin with. Baltimore's not like New York and LA. They don't have as much production going on. These people were counting on that money. And those families that you now know were counting on that money. And the thought of them just not having that job and then there not being another show rolling into town, it was, I couldn't sit on that, and I couldn't feel good about myself. Obviously, for me personally, I wanted to do the show. I wanted to finish the story. I wanted to have this, you know, Netflix flagship original streaming show. We're going to end like that. It didn't sit well with me. So there was a lot of things, but I'd say the crew played a really big part in it.
The final scenes, your end is very Shakespearean. The end of Doug. Do you think it was an appropriate end? I mean, you, Robin Wright takes you out.
Yeah.
She takes you out. It was letter opener, right?
Yeah, yeah, which I have.
You have the letter opener?
Yeah.
Where is it right now?
It's in my nightstand. My nightstand that is actually an Apple box that Gary J, the camera operator, made me. This really cool custom Apple box that he painted soldier blue appropriately for Stamper, he said. And I put it inside that, so it's in my nightstand. And then the magnetic one, so I wore a breastplate, and the magnetic one that went into me, so it was only half coming out, that one is on my shelving unit that surrounds the television. So it's one's on display and one's tucked away. What was the original question? I forget. The letter opener.
Oh, was it fitting?
Was it fitting? Yeah. I mean, look, I think you're always going to have people who are happy with the ending of a show, and you're always, especially a show that's loved by many people, you're going to have people that hate the ending and people who love the ending. I felt it was very appropriate in that it was a Shakespearean ending. You know?
It really was, yeah.
And to go back to season one, episode one, where he puts the dog out of his misery and says, no more pain. And then she closes the show by saying, no more pain. And it's funny, we just did a Q&A and Robin said, you know, she's like, I looked at it like Mama Bear putting the baby bear down, because this character, no matter what, he wasn't going to get what he wanted. And he wasn't going to rest until he did. And so there was, this guy is just, he's helpless, and she put him out of his misery, so to speak, you know? And I think that's why he didn't, in my mind, why he didn't fight it, you know? There was no will to survive at that moment. He knew when he couldn't do it to her, when he drew blood, looked down, saw the baby. Sorry for all the spoilers, guys, but you've had plenty of time. looked down, saw the baby, saw Frank maybe there, and was like, I can't. Mm-hmm. He knew at that moment, he's going to die. Secret Service is going to come and kill him, or she's going to kill him. Like, and at that point, it probably was a great sense of relief for him. You know, this guy lived living hell for that guy for years. You know, it's to be Doug Stamper, I would never want to be that man. It was fun to play him, but man, messed up head that guy's got.
My guest is Michael Kelly. So you're on to another streaming service.
Yeah.
You're on to Jack Ryan. Tell us a little bit about the character you're going to play.
I play a character named Mike November. He is the chief of station for the CIA in Caracas, Venezuela. And Jack Ryan and Wendell Pierce's character as well come to Caracas, Venezuela to solve something. And they meet me at the end of the first episode, and then madness ensues for the rest of the season. We had a blast. We were down in Bogota.
I was going to ask, did you go to Caracas?
Yeah, no, we did not go to Caracas. But funny enough, right, we come home, and it couldn't have been more than a month or two after we came home, and not even kidding, things were happening in real life that we were like,
wow.
John Krasinski texted me and Wendell, we're on a text chain together, and they're like, he's like, oh my God, did you see this? And I was like, yes. And we're just blown away that with the parallels that happened in the show and what happened in real life. And we went to Bogota and we shot most of it there, and then some in the jungle and a little bit in Cartagena and some in New York. Some in California. It's a pretty worldly show.
I was gonna say, most of House of Cards was filmed in Baltimore and
99.5. Yeah, we did some stuff in D.C. like pickup shots, but almost everything was in Joppa, Maryland. Yeah.
What was the experience like to go from having this, you know, sort of contained world of House of Cards, and then now you're globetrotting?
It was insane. You know, it's funny because I would just, you know, I kept my apartment. Obviously, mm-hmm. my family stayed here in New York when we shot House of Cards, and I kept an apartment in Baltimore. And I would just drive the 3 hours and listen to my lines and just drive there and then drive home. And most of the time, I would come home for at least the weekend. Sometimes in the latter seasons, especially, they'd give me a Friday or a mm-hmm. Monday because they knew I had kids. But then, to hop on a plane and go live in Bogota for 3 months, didn't come home once.
Wow.
It was crazy. It was crazy. I love it. It was a beautiful place. The food was amazing. But I was very ready to come home. You know, I don't speak Spanish, and that's on me. But my character speaks Spanish. That's another story. But it was.
What were your tutorials like? Was it all just phonetically, or?
It was, I had to learn it all phonetically. I mean, obviously, it takes me a long time to memorize anyway, but Spanish, for me, it was like learning, you know, Latin. I don't know it at all. So I had to have a dialect coach, obviously. And then I broke it all down and I wrote out every single word in Spanish and then in English and
wow,
what everything meant. And then sort of sometimes you kind of had to do sentences at a time as what the meaning behind it was, because I didn't want to just memorize the sounds of the words. I wanted to have inflection.
Do your job.
Do my job. So, but it was hard, man. Like, I, you know, and I'm sure Spanish speaking people will probably watch it and be like, ah, but I feel like I did, you know, I did a pretty good job, I think.
Without giving too much away, will you be back for a third season?
I don't know.
TBD, to be determined. Any other projects you can share with us?
Actually, I just did my first, this is pretty funny, because I went straight from House of Cards into Jack Ryan, you know, over a year of time of just straight work, I decided to take a little time to be with the family. And then this endorsement campaign came along, and I haven't done a commercial in, I don't know, 15, 20 years probably. You know, there was a point back then when you didn't do commercials. Now it's like, it's okay to do commercials. There's this whole weird thing. But my manager called me, and he was like, my manager B, and I love him to death, he calls me, he's like, how do you feel about monetizing your baldness? And I was like, not doing a Rogaine commercial. he was like, no. I'm going to send you this copy. Tell me what you think. And he sends me the pitch from Shy Day, and it's for Supercuts. And it was so funny that I was laughing out loud at every single spot that they had written. And I called my manager back. I was like, dude, this is really funny. He's like, I know, right? And one of the things with always playing the bad guy and not being a bad guy in real life is you want to play something else. And so I've come close several times on a comedy or something that's just not, you know, the bad guy, the heavy. And they're always like, do you have any tape? You know, do they have any tape on Michael doing comedy? And they're like, no, but he's funny. You got to just trust us. And everyone's always like, ah, and I get close and I never get it. So this was an opportunity, not just a financial opportunity, but an artistic opportunity to show another side of me being funny, because the spots are hilarious. So I am going
to Google after the show.
It'll be out. I think.
Oh, is that out yet?
No, I think they're gonna drop it. No, it's a big campaign. I think they're dropping it July.
All right.
Yeah. Yeah. Soon.
That is so great. Thank you for cluing us into that.
It's really funny,
Michael Kelly. It was a pleasure to have you here.
Really a treat. Thank you for having me.